Each song cycle tells a story. Once you understand what they're saying, they're incredible. One time I was on the beach close to Ensenada, and there were Kumiak on both sides of the border that were there. And I remember we were singing a song, and it talked about the three stars and Orion's belt. And it talks about the three mountain sheep. They teach us how to overcome adversity because they can live in a place where there's very little water or no water and very little food. And I remember when we were singing it, I was looking at the elders that spoke the language, and they were looking up at the sky and their hands were up. So when we sing the songs, it's like we're all going on a journey together. And it's a beautiful thing.
This oral tradition is known as bird singing. It's been passed down for centuries among the tribes across the American Southwest. The song cycles are laden with pre-colonial history, but also wisdom and guidance for successive generations. Groups of boys and men, often guided by their elders, are the keepers of this practice. They're only accompanied by a gourd fashioned into a shaker and each other. Native American communities and their traditions have been under threat since the arrival of the first Europeans, carrying diseases which wiped out millions. Although these tribes may have believed such devastation was a dark period relegated to history, today the spread of COVID-19 threatens their survival once again. This is the Ground Truth Podcast. I'm Charlie Sennett. Report for America Corps member Risa Johnson spent time covering indigenous communities for the Desert Sun newspaper in Palm Springs, California. She first came across bird singing at powwows and festivals with large groups of people, well before we were familiar with social distancing. But the threat of COVID-19 has forced these traditions to adapt, online and in isolation. In this episode, Risa Johnson is on the ground with the bird singers of the American Southwest.
Stan Rodriguez was in his 30s when a Kumeyaay elder took him on as an apprentice.
I remember when he took me in, he said, because he had no apprentices, for him to sing by himself was like a coyote howling at the moon alone. He said, it sounds terrible. But he said, when two coyotes howl at the moon, that's music.
He's a member of the Ipai Nation of Santa Isabel, part of the larger Kumeyaay Nation, which is split by the U.S.-Mexico border. Stan's teacher lived in a Kumeyaay community just across the border in Baja, Mexico.
I started going over to his house. Him and his wife, they were both elderly people. I would bring food and we would talk. And as my teacher, he also helped me to become proficient with the language. He would tell me what the songs meant, and we would talk in the language, and he would correct me. And there were some words that he would say, and he knew the meaning of it, but he said, we don't use those words anymore. Some of these stories, they talk, they're thousands of years old.
Bird songs have preserved those thousands of years of history, which include the physical history of the region. Take this one about the Salton Sea in the California desert. Even though we know the lake has been shrinking for decades, the Kumeyaay song documents that transition over centuries.
What that talks about was a time when it was filled with water, and when the water was receding, everybody was getting ready to leave. The birds were leaving, the coyotes were leaving, all the animals were leaving because it wasn't what it was before. And even if you notice, there's stone fish traps on the side of the hills. And it speaks to the time of the water. Well, it's also a historical account within our songs.
So how is the language surviving today, Kumeyaay, or how is it being passed down?
When I started my doctoral program about 3.5 years ago, there were 74 speakers. At this time, there are 42 speakers left, and almost all of them are over the age of 60. So, I mean, we've lost almost half of our speakers. So here at Kumeyaay Community College, one of the things that we're focusing on is reversing language shift. According to the UNESCO 9 factors of language, vitality and endangerment, 5 being stable and 0 being extinct, the Kumeyaay language is listed as 1, which is critically endangered. And because the songs are in the language, the ones who are learning the language, they are learning language as they sing. They may not understand what they're singing, You know, it's kind of like Spanish. One Tarahumara, Wahio, one. You know, some people learn that, but they don't know what it means. But as they take classes, oh, that's what I'm singing about. And it fits it all together.
Do you know how many different languages it can be sung in?
Well, it's mainly in the Hokan or the human language group, the Kumeyaay, Quetzal, Mojave, the Maricopa, Hualapai, Yavapai, Havasupai, Kokopa, Paipai, Kiliwa, and Cochimi. Then the other group would be the Euro-Aztecan group, the Kawias, Serranos, Tataviam, which are the Ferdinandos, Lucenos, Juaneños, which are the Hajiman, the Tongva, which are the Gabrielinos, those groups.
You said Kumeyaay is critically endangered. How about most of those languages? Are they also endangered?
All of them are. All of them are endangered. Some of them are extinct, or we would call dormant, like a Hajiman, Tongva, and Tataviam. There are no speakers left. So there's work being done to revive those languages.
So some of these languages are only essentially preserved through the songs right now?
Some of them are. Some of them are. That's right.
Wow. What are some of the stories about? Could you just give us an idea?
Sure, I can do that. The song is called Hanyar, which means the frogs that are in love. It talks about when the sun and the moon were going to get married and all the animals were coming to the wedding. There were these two frogs we call Hanyar. These two were in love. They said, you know, let all the animals go up the mountain first because they were going to have the wedding way at the top of the mountain. And right when the last animal went around the corner, the two frogs had intercourse because they had so much passion for each other. After they were separated, you know, they were getting ready to go up, and the female, her stomach started growing bigger and bigger and bigger. And the male frog looked, well, what happened to you? She goes, I don't know. And she jumped into a pond and boom, out came all these polywogs. And they said, look what happened when we did this. We need to warn the sun and the moon. And when they finally got to the top, the sun and the moon said, what took you so long? And they said, sun, moon, you cannot get married. And they said, why can't we get married? We love each other. And they said, because when you get married, you're going to unye, you know, you're going to have intercourse. And look what happens when you're going to have intercourse, because we did it. And they pointed at the pond, and it was filled with little frogs croaking. And they said, sun, you are sacred. Moon, you are sacred. There's only one of each of you. But if you two come together, the sky will be filled with suns and moons. And we already know at certain times, the ground gets really hot because of you, sun. And you know, moon, certain times, you know, you're glowing brightly. It's almost as bright as daytime for us. But if you have suns and moons, it's going to get too hot for us. And it's going to get so bright we can't go to sleep at night. And the sun and the moon said, you are correct, but we love each other. So what do we do? And the animals said, yes, we need to know that you two are going to behave. So they agreed that the moon would go to sleep when the sun is up. And when the sun went to sleep, the moon would come up. That way they knew that they were all behaving. So that's why things are the way they are today. But every now and then you'll see the sun and the moon that are up around the same time. You know, one's on one side, one's on the other. We say, Shotok Nihingwa. You know, they're throwing kisses at each other. You know, they're gazing upon each other. And every now and then, you'll see like a solar eclipse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, even the sun and the moon, like, they break down every now and then.
I understand the tradition of bird singing nearly died out a few decades back. Could you tell us some more about that history?
When the United States took possession of California, Arizona, these areas, some of the policies that when it wasn't outright extermination, they had a policy of assimilating. Part of it was the boarding schools. Boarding schools started in the 1870s. They did not respect the beliefs of the people, our language, our culture. our religion was outlawed. When all these things happened, most of the songs went underground, so very few people learned them. So that was the problem. And there were people that still sang, there were people that still did things, but it was getting more and more difficult to teach other people. And American Indian boarding schools completely discouraged cultural practices. So you've had like one, two generations of people who didn't learn. It wasn't until the Freedom of American Indian Religion Act was passed on August 11th of 1978 that we had the same protections as other people in American society. So in the 70s and 80s, it started to make a revival.
Some Native American communities have been hit hard by COVID-19. In May, the Navajo Nation had the highest infection rates in the country, even higher than the state of New York. When I spoke with Stan, he told me there had been no cases in his tribe and that their efforts were focused on protecting the elders. I asked if COVID-19 had led him to reflect on the devastating pandemics brought by colonization.
The United States government, you know, when they talk about chemical, biological, radiological warfare, they did that on us. They would bring our people blankets. They would take them off of patients who had smallpox and give them to us. People don't realize that 90% of the Native American population in the Americas was annihilated due to viruses, due to these sicknesses that were brought in via Europe. And our people have endured wave upon wave. We've learned, and we've had to do this by experience. One of the things that we did was we isolated ourselves. And to have this happen again, many people are like, stay away from them. We've had this happen before, but people struggle with it.
So I also wanted to ask you, why do you think it's important to carry on the tradition of bird singing and then also the Kumeyaay language?
For the Kumeyaay people, where I'm at, this is our holy land. Our footprint has touched the ocean because we have village sites that are under the Pacific Ocean. Our footprint touches the desert because we were there when it was a lake. We have knowledge of this land when there was glaciers here. It talks about that in our stories. It talks about these things. It talks about who we are. It's our identity. Nobody should have to lose their identity in order to navigate through society. And keeping our identity, keeping who we are, our cultural life, our language, this is our birthright. If other people don't want to speak their language, if they don't want to know who they are, well, that's them. But you know what? That connection that they have to the beginning of time is gone. We know that. That's why we're bringing it back. And conformity, just hearing that, you have to be a certain way. Why? Why does everyone have to be a certain way? I was talking in Kumeyaay to my aunt on a cell phone at a grocery store in Ramona. And there was this white woman, late 60s, early 70s. She tapped me on the shoulder. She goes, excuse me. And I turned around and said, yes. And she said, where are we? And I said, we're here in the grocery store. She goes, we're in America. You need to talk American. And I lost it on her. After I explained it very loud, very rude, she looked at me. She said, I was just trying to help. Who the hell do people think they are? I mean, but you know what? That's how she was taught. That's how she was raised. That's how this society taught. It did not teach celebration of the differences. It taught conformity. And we, as natives, will never conform. I am native. I am dark. According to her definition, I will never fit in. And they're not from here anyway. And then they're telling people, go back to your own country. And it's that lack of awareness on her part, or it's that warped sense of entitlement that, you know, that is driving many of the people, and it's pushing people apart. And that's what I'm speaking to.
Dr. Stan Rodriguez teaches the Kumeyaay language at Kumeyaay Community College. He also teaches bird singing to the next generation of the Ipai Nation of Santa Isabel, outside of San Diego.
My mom used to tell me that when I was a baby, sometimes I would just get fussy and being a baby. My dad was like, yeah, give him here. I'll go to him and I'll just calm down. I'll hear the songs.
That's Jeremiah Shaw. He's a member of the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian community near Scottsdale, Arizona. Normally, he and his fellow Red Mountain Bird Singers would be singing at powwows across the region. But those events have been canceled because of COVID-19. So instead, he's been recording videos of his singing and posting them on Facebook. Bird singing has been a part of his life since childhood.
Well, when I was younger, I started throwing the gourd. And that was about 20 years ago, back when I was 8 years old. By the time I was 10, I learned the songs of my people out here in Salt River. And then the words, I was catching on really quick. And then one of my relatives waved to me, like, come sing with us. And I looked at my dad. My dad's like, go sing. The elders are calling you. I just started throwing the gourd with them and picked up from there, learning all different kinds of tribal songs and their meanings.
Throw the gourd, does that mean shake it?
Shake it in a certain way, make it go. Make that sound. Yeah.
What is bird singing? How would you define it?
To me, bird singing is just, it's lovely. There's always different styles of bird singing. And for example, when I go to gatherings and when we all would do our social songs, like all the different people that come by, like the Desert Mount Kuyas, you know, the Kumeyaay from Southern Cal, the singers from Yuma out here in Salt River, Hualapai Country, Supai, Yavapai, Apaches, Needles from Mojave area, Koopa singers from out there in Paula, California, in that area. When we all come together and we'd all just sing the socials, and everybody go out there and dance, it's like, I just cannot express it because it's like the atmosphere. I can't really explain it more. You just had to be there to feel like the emotion that the singers, when they're singing, hear the power in their voices, you know, like, and all the other singers singing in sequence, you know, with the throwing of the gourds, same thing, the young women going out there dancing as well, moving their dresses around. When you're there, it just feels great. But when I sing, it's something that I know that I'm proud of. There were some dark moments in my life that I just was just young and dumb. And I talked to my dad about it, and he said, like, don't let it get to you. Whatever you're going through, you know these songs heal. You know these songs help. And so I thought to myself, I'm like, all right. So I'm like, you know, whatever I go through in life, these songs, like I said, I just always feel at peace. And I listen to them when I'm about ready to go to sleep too. And so sometimes when I'm singing, like, I'll get a little sleepy. I'm like, oh no, like, I can't fall asleep while I'm practicing. I guess to answer your question, it's just, I feel peace when I sing. And that's a hard thing for me to actually find, is peace. So the songs help me find it.
How have you changed how you perform in the time of COVID-19?
Still singing, even though it's on video. It's not the same at all, but it just feels great to let people know that, like, hey, you know, I'm still out here too. I'm still singing. You know, ain't nothing stopping me from singing. You know, but virtually, it is a little bit of annoying. That's one thing I miss, is just like before singing, you know, you visit with people, just talking with people. That's one thing that's changed. You know, catching up in person than over Facebook, whatever.
Hi, everybody. How's it going? Well, we are the Red Mountain Bird Singers with our brother here, Jeff Thomas. We went to go pick him up, hence why we started a little late, but we're going to be getting started now. Got my other brother here, Myron Manuel, and with him, Jeremiah Shaw. We're singing tonight because the whole pandemic that's going on right now with that COVID-19 and quarantines going on, you know, this ain't going to stop us from sharing our songs, from sharing the bird. Let everyone know that, hey, we're all still here. And we're all still jamming, so.
I noticed in the video, you know, of you singing on Facebook, happy birthday to a coworker, and like the style of bird singing.
Happy birthday to you, Katie.
I was a surprise, and I was like, I'm just going to do it, see what happens. And but frankly, my coworker liked it, and I'm like, cool. How that song came about, I believe, like, we just kind of, like, altered it to where it's, like, instead of the Kaweah-style bird, it's the regular bird style that we sing.
Are there any who disagree with putting it online?
There are some people that disagree with this. They think their elders would get upset. My dad was a little upset at first because that was, like, a one-time thing before. Then I sing, like, two other times. And he says, is this, like, a regular thing now? I'm like, it's just for now, because he thinks that everything's going to change to virtual now. And that's what worries him. And I told him, like, yeah, we can't go to our gathering, but we can still do it in a way till we're all able to meet up again.
Why do you think it's important to carry on the tradition of bird singing?
Because it's something that's been passed down for thousands of years, from generation to generation or from person to person. And it's very sacred to us. Something that heals people, that heals yourself. We don't do this for entertainment. We do this for attainment. We do it for ourselves. We do it for our people. That's one thing a lot of people care about, is the young generation keeping up with these songs. So young kids are learning nowadays, wanting to learn how to sing and dance. You know, we teach. And I love it very much. And I know for a fact I will never stop. It's with me. It's in my heart. It's with me forever.
Jeremiah can't wait to join singers from across the country for that first post-COVID powwow, whenever that may be. Until then, he plans to continue to share videos of bird singing on Facebook.
Risa Johnson is a 2020 graduate of our Report for America initiative. As a core member, she wrote about local Native American communities for the Desert Sun in Palm Springs, California. There are a couple of extras on the groundtruthproject.org which you should check out. In addition to this podcast, Risa Johnson has also written about Native Americans' struggles for the right to vote and the issues facing their community as we approach the presidential election in November. Her essay is part of Report for America's new series, On the Ground with American Experience, a collaboration between Report for America and PBS's historical documentary program and its four-hour special, The Vote. Our new series of dispatches explores efforts to expand voting rights in communities across the U.S. We've also posted videos of bird singers from a festival hosted by the Agua Caliente Band of Kaweah Indians, who are local to Palm Springs. It's all at thegroundtruthproject.org, which is linked in your podcast app's episode notes. Tell us what you think of this episode and give us a rating. Tell your friends they can subscribe wherever they listen. The Ground Truth Podcast senior producer is Mitch Hanley. Major funding for this season of the podcast comes from the MacArthur Foundation and other supporters. I'm Charlie Sennett, founder of the Ground Truth Project, which supports emerging journalists to do on-the-ground reporting in undercovered corners of the world. On the next Ground Truth Podcast.
I am now recording inside the shower area. This is a prison shower. The water smells so bad, it smells like they be taking a shower in fish water.
I can always say somebody love these people. Somebody, even though they're incarcerated, it's not our job to treat them like dogs. I mean, we're not running a kennel over there. They run the prison, and they need to be treated like humans.
On the ground, inside the Mississippi prison system.